Talk to me a little bit more about what gets in the way of people reinventing themselves and getting past this idea. Like, what do you have to say to them, or how do you help them to move forward?
This is the Addiction Recovery Podcast with Stephen T. Ginsburg, founder of Restore Detox Centers in sunny California. Enjoy your experience.
Stephen, the other day you texted me this phrase, who I was, not who I am, not who I will be. What did you mean by that?
Steve, thank you. I texted you that because it's such a central point as to what we were focusing on that day in group at Restore. And I think it's so important that we live by the fact that we don't regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And who we are in that moment where we're starting our journey in sobriety isn't defined by the transgressions of our past. And it doesn't begin to let us understand or know what's coming for us down the road if we don't leave before the miracle. So I just feel like that foundation piece, that phrase, if you would, gives people who are new to this journey and who are finding their way back again to a path of sobriety, the one of the most imperative positions, which is a position of hope, understanding that they are not defined by what's occurred, and nor are they limited to any outcome by what will be as long as they do their part and stay sober.
I mean, you work with a lot of individuals. Do you feel like that's a common theme? In other words, do people feel like this shame and these barriers, like mindset barriers, when they, have had a troubled past? And is it hard for them to get past that and to move forward into the future?
That's such a good follow-up right there, brother, because remorse has no place in the journey. We've got to give ourselves grace. We've got to let ourselves off the hook. And we've got to not sit there and beat ourselves up. People who are struggling and who are suffering or who have setbacks, there's been enough wreckage. We don't need to inflict more upon ourselves. So I want to get people away from remorse, and I want to get them into the half full side where they can understand there is a gain to be had from our experience. There's something better that lies ahead, but make no mistake about it. We've got to see what occurred, why it occurred, how we're going to use that to our benefit, and how we're going to use it as the fuel to propel us forward in our sober journey.
So what if somebody's listening to this and they feel like what they've done was really, really bad, like a terrible thing, and they just can't forgive themselves? What advice would you have for them to help them to overcome this thinking and to have this like fresh start in life?
I would implore them to understand that that is a very huge version of low-hanging fruit for the disease of addiction and alcoholism to try to keep people from finding their way to recovery and to hope, and that it's a lot. They are not terminally unique. We all have transgressions that have occurred. We've all fallen short. We've all comprised a great list of people we have to make amends to, and that by living those amends and by forgiving ourselves first and doing the footwork, that's the way to bridge that gap to where we're in this place where we think, which again is a fallacy. We are so awful, we don't deserve the benefit or the gift of sobriety. That is a lie of the enemy, and I will not let that lie live in my presence.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I was 20 years old, I was somewhat out of control. I mean, I wasn't like super crazy, but for me, I was making a lot of terrible mistakes and they're just compounding. Well, finally, I decided to get my life in order. And as part of that process, I got out the pad of paper and a pen, and I would just write letters to different people. Now, they weren't necessarily people that I did terrible things to, but there are some people from my past that I wanted to express appreciation to. So, for example, like my wrestling coach, he was a huge mentor in my life, a huge father figure. And, he covered the cost of a lot of tournaments that we went to that otherwise we weren't able to afford, my mom and I. I was being raised by a single mom at the time. So I would have missed out on those tournaments if it wasn't for his support and sponsorship. So I wrote him a letter and just told him how much he meant to me. And I just dropped it in the mail. And then I'd do another letter to another mentor and another person who impacted my life. But also I'd mix in letters to people that, I did terrible things to, or I said mean things to, or whatever. And it was such a healing process. I probably wrote like 20 to 30 letters. And some people I heard back from and they're like, oh my goodness, it's so great to hear from you. I cannot believe, you know, you reached out and you shared your story and your thoughts and everything else, your feelings with me. And other people I never heard from. But regardless of that, it's a part of my healing process, my healing journey. What type of advice do you have, Stephen, as it relates to somebody who's trying to get their life back in order and maybe they've done some bad things? Do you recommend them like going back to the past and reaching out to people and making amends? Or is it more like, hey, just move forward and don't do that stuff again? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's really imperative, and I love what you did. And I think that's, there's a version of inventory contextually being done there, which is super healthy. And I think it's important for people to make direct amends wherever possible, just like it says in the steps, except when to do so would injure them or others. And then one of the more important things I want to come alongside people and help them understand, we need to make amends without expectations. Sometimes we'll hear back. Sometimes we'll hear back something we don't love. Sometimes we'll hear back something that feeds us and lifts us up beyond any measure that we expected. It doesn't matter what the response is or if there's any response to these amends. What matters is that we've taken care of our part in it. And taking care of our part in things is what keeps us from carrying around that shame. And that shame is the fuel and the propulsion for what? Remorse. And so then we are out of that trick box. And we are starting to live life as we should, which is we're clear, we're clean, there's hope, we're moving forward, and we're finding out more and more about ourselves through this journey every day.
What if somebody simply won't forgive us? Yeah, you reach out to them and you try to make amends, but they're like, hey, look, what you did is terrible, or you're a terrible person. I hate your guts. I'm not going to forgive you. Do you feel like somebody could still move forward, or what are your thoughts on that?
I feel like they must move forward. The individual who reached out took care of their part, but we must do it without expectations. And sometimes we need support from others to help us not have expectations. Once that part is complete, if that's the response, whatever the individual's version of prayer is, put that person in prayer. Let it go. Your hands are clean. Your side of the street is taken care of, and move on with your life. If you're still having a terrible time with that because of the response, find someone. If you're in my walk of life, you're turning to a sponsor or a contemporary in the program to process with and through and to about. If you're just out there in the world, you know, someone trusted in your life, talk it through with them, process it, get clear of it, move on because you've taken care of your part.
No, and I think that's absolutely right. You know, our forgiveness is not based on somebody's willingness to forgive. I mean, otherwise, you know, we just remain stuck and we wouldn't be able to progress. So I agree with that. I want to go back to this idea, who I was, not who I am, not who I will be. It's interesting. The other day I was doing this keynote address up in Fort Collins, Colorado, and that's where I went to school for a year in my undergraduate studies. And there's this one road into Fort Collins right off the highway, and it's called Prospect. And that's how you get to the university. And I remember driving up and down this road multiple times, you know, while I was going to school there to come to the program and then come home and then go back and forth. But anyways, I'm driving to the speaking engagement this week, and it was right off that road. And so many memories popped up. And I thought, oh, that's where my friend used to live, to the right. That's the gym we used to work out at. And there's the restaurant we used to go to all the time. And it just brought back all these memories and these thoughts. And so here I was, that was about, you know, 25 years ago that I went to school there, and a lot of the things were the same. You know, the businesses were pretty much the same and the houses looked pretty much the same. Maybe the trees were bigger. Maybe some things had gone downhill a little bit, but new things popped up. But regardless, I thought to myself, you know what? The only thing that's really different is me and my mindset. That's what's changed. So oftentimes around us, we'll go back to a certain area or a certain thing, and the thing is pretty much the same, but it's our mindset and it's our progression that makes all the difference. What are your thoughts on that?
I love what you just said, and I'll tell you what I'm really tuned into where that's all concerned. I love that you were driving on Prospect Road towards that school. Wow, what a great talking point within the answer here. Yes, you know, we are that prospect in life driving down this road. and heading towards that place, that institution of education and fulfillment, and how fitting. And that road doesn't necessarily change as we go along the way, but we keep changing as we go along the way, and we keep working and building. And again, it's the road behind us that got us to the road in front of us. And ultimately, again, we're heading towards a destination where we learn, where we grow, where we heal, and where we find out that it's the changes within me that matter most. It's not what everyone else around me does. So I just love, again, thank you. That's a gift for me from you today, unexpectedly. Prospect Road on the way to the university. I'm going to be putting that in my notes when I get home to my iPad.
I love that. No, I love that. And I mean, it's such a great topic. And that's why I'm so glad that we're talking about this, because, you know, what an amazing opportunity to be able to, you know, repent and repair and to fix ourselves and to move forward in life and have these fresh starts. I mean, can you imagine if you made one mistake in your life and the rest of your life, you had to, you know, live with it. And it's like this thing that holds you back and you can never progress. I mean, how terrible would that be? Because we all make mistakes. And so I'm just grateful for that, for fresh starts. And just for that idea, like, hey, who I was in the past, even the guy 20 years ago, 25 years ago at school, is not the same Steve today. And I'm constantly reinventing myself. But Stephen, talk to me a little bit more about what gets in the way of people reinventing themselves and getting past this idea. Like, what do you have to say to them, or how do you help them to move forward?
You know, there's a little bit of repetition in my answer. I'm not apologizing for it. I think it's good that there is, because again, it's that shame. And shame is such a lie, Steve. Mm-hmm. When we carry around shame for things that have occurred, and when we allow the shame of areas where we've fallen short, and people fall short, if that shame is going to dictate terms, if that shame is going to shackle us, and many times it does, into the realm and the pain and the pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, addiction, and alcoholism, we must do everything imaginable along the way to reset that parameter, to rid ourselves and cleanse ourselves of that shame, and to move forward, because that is where the healing comes from. And that's where, really spot on with what you shared, that's the important part, to not get stuck. That's where we tie into, that's who I was, that's not who I am, that's not who I will be. And a day at a time, that is an ongoing process through life. A day at a time, that is an ongoing process through life.
I love that. No, I love that. And even talking before this recording, you're telling me about yesterday and how it's so hard. And I just love, you know, how you incorporate these messages even in your everyday living. And you're like, hey, Steve, I just had to take one call at a time, get through each call. And it's just one day, one call, one day, one conversation, one email, whatever it is. But when we break it down like that, we can really make progress and we won't get so overwhelmed by this like big macro thing that we have to do. So this has been a great conversation. Stephen, thanks for bringing up this topic, because it's a message that I needed to hear today. And I'm sure a lot of people out there need to hear it as well. So I appreciate your insights.
Steve, thank you for focusing on the solution as always. And it is truly fundamentally a design for living. And it truly works a day at a time for all of us. And there is hope for a solution today within everything contextually that we've done, that we're doing, and that we will do.